Surprise! If you notice the title of today's episode, it says What We've Learned. I'm so excited because I'm here for a special podcast episode today. This week's our 5-year anniversary, so I thought it'd be fun to do a marriage-themed episode. Today we're going to be sharing a bunch of things we've learned in the 5 years we've been married and the 6 years that we've been together. Sure, we're definitely not experts, and we still have literally an eternity to go, but I think we've learned a lot, and I hope you can at least learn one thing today. I think it's important to hear how other people do things or respond to situations because it takes you outside of your own little bubble and invites you to think about things differently. Since there's not really one right way or perfect way of being in a relationship, other than being kind, of course, it's really good to see how other couples do things so you can discover new ways to foster your own relationship.
Isn't it so fun to hear his voice? We were originally just going to have me start, and then he's like, what if I started the episode? So this is Tyler, everybody. Tyler's my husband. And like he said, we're going to be doing today's episode together. And before we dive in, I just want to give a really quick shout out to Kat for her review on episode 28. She said, thank you so much for this. I just found out I need to have surgery for an umbilical hernia, and I was just going to hold off until my baby was older due to breastfeeding. This made me rethink my decision and not be so scared to do it. Kat, I wish you the best with your journey, and I am so glad that I could bring some peace of mind to your situation. And to you, Mama, who's listening to today's episode, if you find today's episode helpful, please, please, please leave a review. You can do that in the podcast platform, or you can also go to the show notes and leave a rating and review for the specific episode. So however you choose to do that, that would be so helpful. It helps the podcast grow and continues to give me resources to provide this for you for free. So with all of that, let's jump into today's episode, all about what we've learned in our 5 years of marriage.
Hey Mama, my name is Brooke, and just like you, I want to show up for my kids in the best way possible. But you and I both know that that means our cup needs to be filled first. Here on the Well-Nourished Mama podcast, we learn about all the different ways we can nourish our bodies, minds, and souls in every stage of motherhood, including pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. As a mama of two and certified postpartum nutritionist, I'm here to educate, empower, and inspire you as you navigate your unique motherhood journey and raise your family. Tune in each week for episodes about nutrition, exercise, wellness, lactation, marriage, and so much more, and walk away with simple but actionable tips to help you be a well-nourished mama. Imagine this, you're 3 months postpartum. Even though your baby doesn't sleep through the night, you wake up each morning energized for the day and the afternoon slump is a thing of the past. You're able to remember important information, answer all your toddler's questions, and clearly focus on the task at hand. Your milk supply is thriving and baby is growing well with little colic or digestive issues. Besides the occasional stressor, you're able to regulate your emotions and manage the demands of mom life. And most of all, your physical symptoms from pregnancy and childbirth have healed quickly and with minimal pain or complication. Believe it or not, this can be your reality. My first postpartum experience is what society calls normal. I had night sweats for weeks, my brain fog and fatigue were overwhelming, I developed many food sensitivities, and anxiety ruled my life. Flash forward to now, just 3 months postpartum with my second baby, I'm the total opposite. I'm physically strong, mentally clear, emotionally stable, and I can enjoy foods without restriction. The difference? How I nourished my body during labor and the first 6 weeks postpartum. If you want to truly thrive in postpartum and kick those quote normal symptoms to the curb, join the waitlist to pre-order my new postpartum recovery cookbook. Inside, you'll find a 6-week recovery plan with 48 nourishing recipes and the science behind postpartum recovery so you have all the tools you need to flourish. Head to today's show notes to get on the VIP list.
So this conversation is just going to be a little bit of a back and forth between Tyler and I. It's like sort of scripted, not really. We've just got some notes here that we're going to be going off of. But before we get into our lessons, I thought it'd be kind of fun to share a little bit of our personal story just because it's really cute. Tyler's here and he loves telling the story from his perspective just because it's a little bit unique. So Tyler, can you just share with our mamas a little bit about our story?
Also, more importantly, I'm way better at telling this story than you are, so you gotta keep that in mind. So this, we met about, it was the day before our my first day of class at college, my very first day before my freshman year, and it was your, it was before your second semester. So
yeah, it was my first day back after my mission.
So we both served missions for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I went to Mexico, Brooke went to New Zealand, and we'd both been back for that. She'd been back for about 3 weeks. I'd been back almost a year at that point. So we got back, and they our church had a little get-together. It was like root beer floats and go hang out outside, play some games. And we were there, and it was near the end of the activity, and I saw a friend from high school that I didn't know was at, went to church with us. And I ran over to talk to him, and he was in a circle of people, and they were talking, we were talking, and everyone kind of started trickling away, and the prettiest girl I've ever seen kind of turns into like, hey, how are you? Who are you? What is your name? And all these things. And I remember looking over and going, huh! Kind of just like a little moment of fear, just panic. I was scared. So I tried to not make an idiot of myself. And then I remember driving home with my friends because we'd carpooled over. And I was like, guys, I met a girl tonight. And they're like, oh my gosh, whatever, dude. It's the first day. You did not. So we were laughing and joking about that. And they're making fun of me. So I went out of my way for the next couple weeks to try to run into Brooke at everything I could. She was doing something with the church choir at a couple different levels, so I was all of a sudden a very big member of the choir. I was there every week, front row.
You were very devoted.
Very devoted. All of a sudden, weird how that works, and started going to a bunch of different activities just in the hopes to run into her, saying hi to her in the halls, even though that's very much outside of my personality. Eventually, I worked up the courage to ask her out. We were walking back from another church thing, and I asked her out, and she said yes, finally, and then went on our first date. We had a lot in common, which we both found pretty funny.
Like, we were literally there, and you would ask me a question, and I would give my answer, and then you'd be like, oh my gosh, me too, and it was like that the entire night.
And it wasn't that just like some of it was like, I'm trying to impress her, but then a lot of it was actually like, oh no, like, legitimately, we have this in common.
Yeah.
But yeah, first day, we went axe throwing, went to ice cream.
And you didn't even know the ice cream was my favorite.
I didn't. That was a very, very happy coincidence.
Yes.
But yeah, about a week after that, week and a half after that, we started officially dating. Then a few months after that, so that was October, then we got officially engaged in February, married in May, and
the rest is history.
The rest is history.
Yeah, we basically met and got married within the scholastic year. Like, we met beginning of fall semester and got married just after winter semester was over.
Right.
So yeah, for a lot of people, I'm sure you're listening, you're like, oh my gosh, that's really fast. For members of our church, that's pretty standard.
Especially for BYU.
Yeah, especially for BYU, especially for people who have served missions. So it didn't feel very fast for us. I'm sure it felt really slow for you because it took me a while to come around.
Oh yeah, you wanted to get originally married in like August or something. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. We're already getting married. Why would we push it off 3 months? We could just be married for those 3 months or 4 months, however long it was.
Why be committed and living apart when we could be committed and living together?
Exactly.
Yeah. And if you don't know, we both waited until marriage. So it was kind of a big deal to push off the wedding even further because we're both like, well, nothing's really happening. So might as well just like, you know, get the ball rolling and get married as soon as possible. So yeah, that's kind of our story. Another funny thing that I think makes the story more interesting is that I was pretty sure that I was marrying a guy from home when I met you. And so I did not meet you in the hopes of like dating you. I just met you because you were at the activity. And so we kind of had like these different motives for talking to each other for a while. And then that guy ghosted me, thankfully, so that you could swoop in. And
I would have beat him out either way, so it's fine.
You would have. So yeah, we are celebrating 5 years of marriage this week. That's our story. I have in my notes, since we've been married, we have been to 4 countries outside.
Visited like vacationed too.
Yeah, 4 countries outside of the United States. Been to 11 states together, lived in 4. We've moved 3 times, had 2 kids, bought 1 house, and we are just about to buy a car together. So I think we kind of hit all the boxes. We just don't have a dog.
Yep, for a good while.
For a good while. Yeah, we've got too many little kids at home. So that's a little bit about our story. I think it's really cute. Really glad that Tyler's my husband. So let's get into what we've learned so far. We kind of just started this list and we're just kind of brainstorming off of each other. And I don't think any of these really have a theme to it. It's just kind of random stuff that came to our head. So we're just going to go back and forth. I'll go ahead and start. The first thing that I thought of was, the only thing you should assume is that there's always more to the story. And I thought this was important because a lot of people tell us that we should never assume, right? That's kind of like one of the big things that people tell you when you get married is like, never assume, you're always wrong. Well, I think, and I'm sure you agree, you should always assume that you don't know everything.
It's not so much assuming this, it's you're giving the other person the benefit of the doubt. That's kind of might be a little bit better way of saying that.
That's fair. Yeah. And I think this is kind of through the lens of if you're angry, frustrated, resentful, something's going on, you're like, ugh, Tyler, or ugh, Brooke, and you like want to be upset. I know for me, I always try and take a step back and be like, okay, hold on. There's probably a reason that you didn't do this, or there's probably a reason that you said that the way that you did, or in a way that I don't think you should have said it. And it's not fair to either of us for me to create this narrative in my head until I've given you a chance to say your half of the story.
Right. Yeah. Just give your spouse, the person that you love most in the world, the benefit of the doubt that they're not malicious. They're not doing this thing specifically to bother you most of the time. Obviously, there are exceptions to the rule, as there are with every rule.
You can be petty.
Yeah. There's people that want to be petty. But, you know, sometimes when there's three pairs of socks on the floor, that's... Might just be my fault too. Like it could, you don't know how you're contributing to the situation sometimes. So yeah, getting the whole story is often going to open your eyes and make you realize, oh, okay, I didn't realize that they'd had that rough of a day, or I didn't realize that was going on, or wow, I'm really kind of dropping the ball here. Or maybe you'll be totally right. And then you can move forward and with a little bit of grace. Now you've heard the whole story and you're kind of coming from a better place at that point.
Yeah, I tried so hard to remember what the exact scenario was, but just a couple weeks ago, I was frustrated about something, and it took me probably 30 minutes to say something, and I vocalized it to you, and I told you how I was feeling, and you're like, oh, well, do you remember that you asked me to do this instead? And so that's kind of like where I was coming from, and I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, like, I'm not angry anymore. But yeah, it's just that whole thing of it's kind of pointless to try and be frustrated if you haven't gotten to hear their side. So yeah. Tyler, what's the first thing on your list?
So I've got a nightly routine on our list, or my list here. So it is really important. I'm very much a creature of habit. I like to do the same thing over and over again. Like I ate the same thing for lunch all through high school. And I will 100% make the same breakfast, and I have for pretty much the last year, other than that brief period where I was in Poland for the army. But it is really important to set up routines, these things you do with your spouse every night. So for us, we make our little dessert, whatever it is, a little microwave brownie and some ice cream or a smoothie or whatever, and we'll sit on the couch together and we'll watch a show. We've gone through all sorts of different TV shows. Right now we're watching Community, just a little comedy show, 20 minutes long, makes us laugh, and that's about as much time as I have because I have to be up at 5 most days to get over to work. But having that regular routine, something to look forward to, something you're expecting to do, and that will force you, for lack of a better term, of spending time with one another is super helpful for a relationship. And this can also go into sort of like your dating. For us, it's pretty hard to find a babysitter to go out to eat, especially with Hannah being almost 6 months old. So she's still breastfeeding, and so she's pretty much attached to Brooke all the time. So it's really hard for us to get time away from the kids. So it makes it a lot easier for us to have our alone time when we have the two kids asleep in their rooms away from us so we can be human beings. We can be
a couple
rather than parents. And so that distinction of where they are helps a ton. And so that nightly routine we have, even when we aren't able to go on regular date nights, going out to eat or to mini golf or whatever, it's been so long, I don't know what people do for dates nowadays.
Yeah, and I think the important thing is that the principle is that we are scheduling time together. It's not, oh, do we happen to have time? Oh, I'm too tired. You know, let's take a rain check and do something tomorrow. It's the principle of we have this routine in place so that we are scheduling time in the calendar to be together, even though we only have 30, 45 minutes before you have to go to sleep. And for us, that's made a really big difference in just keeping our relationship feeling like a relationship, not just like we're parents. You know, and then on Fridays when we do get to stay up later, we get to stay up to 10:30.
Oh my goodness. Crazy.
When we do get to stay up later, like last night we played our favorite board game, or, you know, the other night we were looking at cars, we were car shopping. So, right. You know, when we do have more time, we try and do more creative things or, you know, have that extra time together. But the nightly routine, especially during the weekdays, I think, has made a big difference for us.
Definitely.
Next thing on my list, effective communication starts with vulnerability. And I wanted to really highlight this because I feel like a lot of times people will say the key to a successful relationship is communication, but they never tell you what that communication looks like. They don't tell you how to do it. They don't tell you how to recognize if the communication aspect like isn't working. And so what I thought of is that vulnerability is like this key aspect where you have to be willing to vocalize how you're feeling, even if you think it's going to hurt the other person's feelings or whatever. You have to be willing to say what's on your mind so that you have all the information and you can understand why I'm upset or how you can help or, you know, however it's going to make the conversation go better. But if you're not willing to be vulnerable and share those things, then you can't really communicate to your partner.
And another important thing is making sure it's accurate information. So for me, it's sometimes I need to take a little minute to figure out what I'm feeling. Sometimes I'm not the most emotionally intelligent person, and so I can't figure out why I'm upset or angry. And so sometimes I need to take a minute and think about it to figure it out and try to break it down to see what it is. You know, is this, am I frustrated because of work, or am I frustrated because my toddler's hit me for the 100th, 200th time today? Like what is the root of this issue? Why am I, where's this extra emotion coming from? I'm trying to figure that out and then coming to Brooke with that rather than, for me, this might be different for other people, but I like to figure out what the issue is or figure out what I need and then come to Brooke about it. And sometimes all I need is to just talk about it, and that's what I need about for the situation. Sometimes I want feedback. Sometimes I just want to say, hey, this is the thing that I'm going to do moving forward. Help me with this, please.
Yeah. And something else that you've gotten really good at is saying, I recognize that I'm off or that I'm frustrated. I don't know why. I need to think about it. And you and I have had to figure out that you usually have to say that for my benefit, because I'm a person who's like, let's talk about it right now. We'll figure it out as we're talking. And you're the opposite. You're like, no, I need to think about it before we talk about it.
Yeah, if my mouth's moving, my brain's turned off is how it works. And your brain works as your mouth moves. And that's not, neither of us are right or wrong because of that. That's just how we are different as people. It's kind of more stereotypically men and women things, but there are men that think as they talk and vice versa for women. So it's not one way or the other, but that is very stereotypic man and woman ways of thinking, I'd say.
Yeah, but we've had to figure that out over the last 5 years. It took us a second to be like, oh, wait a second. We both process emotions differently. How are we going to make sure that both of us like don't get offended with the other person? So like a really good example, I think everyone has experienced this, is, you know, you recognize that something's off and you come up to me and you're like, hey, you kind of seem a little bit off. Are you okay? And if all I say is, I'm fine, that is not effective communication.
That also means, hey, back off, give her some time. Take one of the kids. Take both the kids if you can, and give her a little minute to process things. Because sometimes you do need to process things alone. Just because it's normally you process one way does not mean that you need to process emotions that way every single time.
Exactly. Yeah. So what I've tried to be better at saying is, you know, I'm really struggling right now. I don't know why. I just need some space. Or, you know, I'm tired. I think it's because Hiram's been screaming at me all day. So I just need a second. Or, you know, just being able to say more than just the very basics, because the very basics isn't going to get either of you anywhere. And it's going to make more of you frustrated. Because at least for me, when you ask me, how are you? In my head, I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to word vomit. And I'm secretly like begging for help, but I'm like too prideful to ask for help. So if all I say is I'm fine, then not only am I not telling you what's wrong, but you also can't help me. And that just makes me more frustrated, but it's my fault. So yeah, being able to be vulnerable and actually say what's on your mind, and then recognizing that each of you might process it differently.
Right. I'll need to kind of jump into the next one here. So a big thing is people always talk about is, oh, you got to put yourself first. You need to worry about you got to take care of yourself first and then everything else. That isn't great for a marriage. Definitely as a single person, you got to figure things out and work with it. But when you're in a marriage relationship, it's a much more, you got to learn to operate differently. You got to put the other person's needs before your own, to the point that don't really worry so much about your needs at all. Trust that your partner will take care of them for you. So my job is to worry about what Brooke needs, what she needs help with, and to help her as much as I can to meet the needs that she has. And her job is to meet my needs. And if we are more worried about fulfilling the other person's needs than our own, these activities that would normally be to fulfill your own needs become something that is a relationship builder rather than an isolator. So if I'm going to go do something, hey, I'm really frustrated today. You know, I want to spend some time by myself. I'm going to go read my book in my room by myself to get some time away from the kids, rather than say, hey, I'm going to stay up a little bit later tonight and I want to just hang out and play a game with you, because that's sort of alone time. At least for me, it's with Brooke, it feels like alone time. So that is a different way of trying to meet that need. I don't know if I'm explaining myself very well here.
Well, what I wanted to add on is, I think what you're trying to highlight is a lot of people say that a marriage is 50-50.
Right.
And what you're trying to show is that it's 100-100, but it's focusing on the other person. So I'm 100% invested in you. You're 100% invested in me. And because both of us are being taken care of, but by the other person, we don't have to worry about being selfish, and we don't have to worry about this whole, well, I did this and you haven't done this. And then it's this whole like trying to be equal thing.
Right.
Like you said, if you can focus on the other person and put all of your energy towards the other person, and you both are on that same page, then you'll both be taken care of without feeling like you're being selfish when you do something that's for yourself.
Right. I should have put that on your list instead of putting it on mine. You explained that way better than I did.
That's why we're doing this together. Let's see. We're kind of jumping around on here. Now, since we're on the thread of communication, I wrote down, learn the communication languages. And what I mean by this is, I'm sure you're familiar with love languages. And I think you and I did this when we were dating. We should probably do it again.
I think we did it at the beginning of our marriage, too.
Yeah. You're familiar with the love languages. We did this at the beginning of our marriage, and we understand what our love languages are. But when I am talking about the communication languages, it's kind of like what Tyler talked about earlier, where I personally need to process things out loud. I need to talk out loud. I need you to be my bounce board. I don't quite know how I feel or what my resolution or answer is going to be. I'm kind of figuring it out as I talk to you, and that is not you.
No.
Most of the time. And so I would always get frustrated being like, oh my gosh, Tyler, talk to me. I can see that you're upset. Please talk to me. And that's just not how you operate most of the time.
Right.
So understanding how you and I communicate, and then being willing to say, okay, Tyler's a person that needs space. He needs to think about it first. I'm not going to be offended if he chooses not to communicate the way that I would, because that's what you need to be present and effective and a part of the relationship.
Right. So yeah, it's that very similar thing. The ones people are more familiar with are definitely the love languages. So to give an idea is, yeah, so let's say my love language is acts of service, right? So I'm going to be most inclined to try to serve Brooke. And that would be the way I would show love to her. But let's say Brooke's a words of affirmation. So instead of these acts of service, what Brooke would appreciate more would be telling her that I love her, that she's pretty, things like that. So trying to match the need of the other person here. So it kind of goes back to what we were saying earlier. So try to figure out what the other person needs and how they want to receive love, and then that can help make things a little bit better, smooth things out communication-wise, and get the most bang for your buck for the time and effort and energy that you're putting in to make your spouse feel the most loved as they can.
Yeah. And you brought up an interesting point that a lot of times, and I think this goes for both of us, the way that we give love isn't always the way that we want to receive it.
Right.
And it goes for communication too. So for me, I was thinking about it. I love giving gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's usually food.
You do love food.
Like, I love making dinner and being like, oh my goodness, Tyler, look at this dinner that I made. It's your favorite. Like, that's my gift, right? So I love giving gifts. And I love serving. I love doing things for people. But how I feel love is when I have words of affirmation or you're spending time with me.
Right.
And so if you can sit down with each other and figure both of those channels out, and then also talk about how you prefer to communicate, that'll resolve a lot of conflict right off the bat, because you're not playing this guessing game and you're not trying to force your partner to be like you in every circumstance.
Right. And then, of course, this goes back to what we, like, I think it was our first point. Give them the benefit of the doubt. Sometimes people are having a really rough time, and it might even be for something that's really dumb. Like, a lot of times I'm upset for dumb things, or about dumb things.
Same.
That don't matter. And that's just part of being a human being. It's part of this earthly experience we all go through. It just, sometimes we're mad for no good reason. Just the brain chemicals are wrong that day, or, you know, the sun's shining too bright or not bright enough, whatever it ends up being. So just give them the benefit of the doubt and just ask them. Sometimes it's, women always will be, oh, well, he's not picking up any of the hints. And men are like, I don't know what she's talking about. Like, sometimes you got to just, you take, for in our relationship, I told Brooke this pretty early on. I'm like, hey, I'm a pretty stereotypical dumb man. Please don't do hints and stuff like that. If you need something, please tell me. I want to meet that need. I'm going to miss hints because I'm dumb and because my brain doesn't operate that way, because I can't communicate well through that method. It's not because I don't love you. It's not because I'm not paying attention to you. It's because I'm too stupid to, you know, I got two brain cells both fighting for third place. So please just tell me if you need something. And that has helped us a ton. I think it has been definitely avoided a lot of fights, because she'll try to like hint at things. I only catch it in hindsight when she goes, hey babe, do this thing for me, please. Holy cow. Like, it's just like, hey idiot, look at me. Like, do this thing that is you should have already picked up on that I needed help with. And
yeah. And something, I know we keep talking about this, but something that you and I have started doing that helps with that communication without feeling like we're just demanding something or being like, hey, idiot, pay attention. Something that we've started doing is for me, for example, if I'm feeling really overwhelmed or I'm really exhausted and I see that the kids need a bath, but also the kitchen's a wreck from dinner, instead of just saying, Tyler, help, because that's what I want, that's not effective communication, right? That's not going into detail. So what I do is I'll say, hey, Tyler, Hiram needs a bath and the kitchen needs to be cleaned up. Which one would you rather do? That, to me, at least from what we've done, is an effective way of saying, here's what needs to be done. This is where my brain is at. I don't want to do all of it. I need help. I want your help, but I'm also offering you an option so that you don't feel like I'm just demanding things of you or bossing you around.
Right. And sometimes you will just do that similar thing. So like, you're just like, sometimes you need to be away from the kids. Just, you've had a long day with them and they've been children. And so they children are children and they'll act childish. And I know, crazy, but you'll be like, okay, hey, kids need a bath. And the dishes needs to be knit. We need to do the dishes, clean the kitchen. I'm gonna clean the kitchen. Can you please take the kids? I need a minute away from them. So it's like, hey, I'm not just pawning this off on you. There's two things that need to be done. I am not in the emotional, mental, physical, whatever space to do one of those two tasks. I'm gonna do this other task that needs doing before we can go to sleep tonight. So please help me out with this other thing. And so giving your spouse all the information, saying, look, I'm doing this thing too. I'm working with you. I'm not going to go sit on the couch and scroll through Instagram reels. I'm working. I just need some help and I need a second by myself.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Did you know that the current standards for prenatal vitamins are only based on the minimum requirements to avoid disease, and that pregnant women were not included in the initial research? On top of that, it's estimated that although 97% of pregnant women take a daily prenatal, 95% of pregnant women are nutritionally depleted both during and after pregnancy. Last time I checked, we deserve to thrive, not just survive during a pregnancy. That's why I choose Needed, a nutrition-based supplement complex that nourishes moms through fertility, pregnancy, and postpartum. Their prenatal vitamins have 23 essential nutrients for pregnancy that have been dosed in optimal levels and methylated for better absorption. They also provide their products in both pill and powder form, so nausea and aversions will never keep you from taking your supplements. Get 20% off your first month of Needed using the code MAMA20, that's MAMA20, at the link in the show notes.
Okay, next one on my list is talking about the little things that keep the spark alive. I definitely struggle with this where I have an all or nothing mentality. And so it feels like if we're not going on these grand dates once a week and we're not ditching the kids and like all of these big things, sometimes it feels like our marriage is slowly just like dwindling away, because that's just how my brain works. It's like this all or nothing. And so something that I've learned is it's the little things that add up. And yes, those big things are important, like planning for anniversaries and like finding a way to go on a big date when you can. But the little things like how you just fill up my water without telling me most of the time, because I am so terrible about drinking water. I don't know what it is. It's so good for you. And I know it is, but I hate water. So what Tyler does is he has just made it his responsibility to fill up my water.
I don't always get to it, I will say. Don't give me too much credit. It's always like when I'm walking by and I look at it and go, I bet that's empty. And then I'll check it and be like, that's empty.
Yeah, but it's like those little things, like those little acts of service where you just have been paying attention to the little ins and outs of my day or the little tiny things that make me happy that I've never probably vocalized, but you just like pick up on it. And then you do that for the other person. Those things add up to keep the bucket full so that you feel like you are loved and that you both are paying attention to each other. And you're not just parents, or you're not just people that go to work from 9 to 5 and then eat dinner and crash because you're so tired.
That's also that paying attention to what your spouse is like, the difficult things they go through. That's a really good way to give gifts. I'm not naturally inclined to gift giving. I'm really bad at it, I think, naturally. So what I've done is I've paid really close attention to what Brooke does, find the things that are pain points in her life, and try to find ways to fix it, to solve those pain points. And sometimes she's like, oh, wow, that's a great... And sometimes I miss. Like, totally, she's like, oh, yeah, that's super helpful. And I can tell that I missed. But a lot of the times it is definitely like, okay, I did something good. And she'll tell me about it weeks later. She's like, this is the best gift ever. You've just solved something that's bothered me so much for so long. I didn't know that there was even such a thing. So for people that seem to have everything, are really hard to shop for, pay attention to the little frustrations that they probably don't even know they're frustrated with. Like for me, I remember in college, I was always frustrated with my mouse because I could never get my mouse. We had our laptops, you know, and we'd go to class and my stupid mouse would always read funny on the desk or whatever it was, or the little slide down things in the auditoriums.
You had one of the portable mouses that you like connected to your computer.
Yeah, a little Bluetooth mouse.
Bluetooth, yeah.
And so she bought me a little case for my mouse to protect it. And then it also doubled as a little mouse pad. And all of a sudden it solved this issue. I never would have thought to buy myself a mouse pad because it's it was 2020. Like, no one uses a mouse pad is what I thought. And anyway, it fit everything perfectly. It was exactly what I needed. It filled a pain point that I wasn't really paying that close of attention to. I was just like, oh, I thought, oh, my mouse is not a great mouse. And I spent $10 on it or whatever on Amazon. So I didn't expect it to work, but that solved a huge pain point.
Yeah. And one that I always use as an example is, and I know if you're listening, you're probably going to be like, oh my gosh, you guys are so lame. But the one that I always come back to is one Christmas. I remember because we were at your family's house and everyone else had these really extravagant, expensive gifts. And I opened a gift from you and it was makeup wipes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And everybody was like, oh my gosh, what did Tyler just do? He's gonna be sleeping on the couch. And I kid you not, I opened the makeup wipes and I kind of looked at it and I was a little bit confused, but then you explained to me why you got them.
So I got these wipes, so every single night she would be taking her makeup off. It wasn't, you didn't always wear makeup every day, but the days you'd wear makeup, you'd put these wipes on and you would try to get your mascara off with these wipes. And you're like, oh, it stings my eyes, it hurts so bad. I remember every single night you did this, and I was like, there's got to be a better way. This is ridiculous. Like, I was, like, so upset with this, like, makeup companies, really. I was, like, taking it out on big makeup, I guess. And then I looked online, and I was like, are there makeup wipes or some sort of solution you can take mascara off without getting these chemicals in your eyes? And there was, I don't even remember what they're called now.
They're called micellar wipes.
Okay, there you go. So, yeah, micellar wipes, and I bought those. And so, yeah, it was a... Definitely, when I was purchasing it on Amazon, it kind of felt like, you know, you're buying a vacuum, you know, for a woman for a holiday or whatever, which is a dangerous game, or some sort of kitchen appliance. Always feels a little bit like, ooh, is that sexist? Is that okay to buy?
Yeah.
It was really scary, like buying makeup wipes, and it didn't even click that I was giving you makeup wipes in front of my family until you were opening it in front of my family.
But then once you explained it to me and you're like, okay, hold on, let me tell you why this is a thing. And then you told me about, I noticed this and I looked for a couple weeks and then I found this thing and you can subscribe to it on Amazon. So it just automatically shows up every single month and you don't even have to think
about it. And you save money on it on top of it.
And you save money. And I literally sat there, I was like, this is the best gift I have ever been given. This is so awesome. And it's those little tiny things where, just like Tyler said, you just pay attention and it really does make all the difference. And obviously, Tyler and I still remember these two gifts. These are like years later. Mm-hmm. Like those gifts were early on in our marriage.
Yeah.
And these are still examples that we talk about every single time because it's such a good example of we're paying attention to the little things and those little things add up to fill up the bucket of we love each other. We don't just like each other and live together and sleep together. We actually like love each other
right. And
have this actually thriving relationship.
Absolutely. I still have the mouse pad.
I still use the makeup wipes.
But not the same one. So I think your gift worked better. So.
No, I do use the same ones.
Oh, I mean, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Anyway.
Still use the same ones. It's like 3 years later.
Okay. So anyway, this brings us to our next point. Marriage isn't a competition. As we like to joke about it, it is like just right there. We're making fun of each other like, oh, your gift was better than mine. And it's really important to remember that it's not a competition, especially with being tired or frustrated or angry. We've seen this a lot with really everyone, any sort of married couple we've ever seen. Doesn't matter what age they are. It's like one of them will say, oh, I'm so tired. And then the other one's like, well, how many times did you wake up with the kids last night? It's like, okay, that's a little like... Just because you're tired doesn't make me less tired. Like,
or doesn't mean I'm not allowed to be tired.
Right, yeah. It's not like it's not a competition, and it's not the person, you don't have to argue over who gets to be tired, you know? Like, it's, you're not bargaining over who gets to be tired. You can both be tired. Like, it's fine. That you just say, wow, we're both tired. Let's try to go to bed early tonight or see what we can do to get the kids to sleep, even though that's impossible. But just remember, it's not a competition. It's a marriage. You're on the same team, not opposing teams. It's not boys versus girls. It's you two against the world. You know, look at it that way. Look at this, your marriage relationship, as a you versus the world, not a you versus each other.
Yeah. And I think this makes a really big difference in like early postpartum,
mm-hmm.
like right after the baby gets there. and if you haven't had kids yet or you have had kids, you really need to like internalize this because, you know, I am an emotional wreck for like the first 4 weeks because the cluster feeding and just those early nights of the newborn are so hard. I remember,
and the wild hormones, remember, that have gone from super high to super low to super high to super low, and they're all over the place, and it just wrecks with your brain chemistry.
Yeah, and so here I am. I'm like, oh my gosh, I am breastfeeding nonstop. I'm not sleeping. I still have to cook, blah, 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 blah. It is so easy for me to sit there and be like, well, nobody can be as tired as me because of all this stuff. But then I turn around and I'm like, okay, but Tyler still has to be a nice person. Despite everything that I'm doing and acting out. And, you know, you have to pick up the slack when I'm tired and you've got your own set of responsibilities that make you tired. And so instead of me saying, well, I bet you're you know, you didn't do this and you didn't do this, so you can't possibly be as tired as me. No, you guys are both tired and you're both allowed to be tired. And heck, you can even, we can even laugh about it and be like, well, looks like it's a movie night for Hiram.
Yeah.
Like, we're doing screen time until bedtime tonight because we are both at 10% and just can't be bothered.
Right. So you kind of touched on something you just said there is we each have our own responsibilities and those responsibilities aren't static. There have been times in our relationship that you've made more money than me and times when I've made more money than you, times when you've cooked more and times when I've made a dinner once a month, two times a month. So responsibilities are not so much a static thing, you know, we'll take turns with the kids and, but we each have different responsibilities and it helps to have a routine that that certain responsibilities are taken care of by certain people. On an average night for us, you make dinner and I do the dishes. And when I make dinner, once in a blue moon, you do the dishes after the dinner. And so you can look at it that way. I'll do laundry if you'll fold the laundry, you know, like go through the washing machine. Because for whatever reason, Brooke thinks that the putting it in the washing machine and moving it to the dryer is harder than folding it.
No, it all sucks.
Okay, that's true. But
it all sucks. It's all the worst chore.
Right. But just, yeah, if you need to break it up that way so it feels like you're doing this even thing, so it's like, okay, I'll do the dishes if you'll clean up dinner and clean up around the kitchen, you know? Or I'll pull weeds and mow the lawn if you'll sweep and vacuum, you know? Just, it doesn't have to be exactly equal or exactly even or take the exact amount of time. You don't need to bust out a timer and, like we just said, don't make it a competition, but it's okay to have different tasks, and they don't need to be stereotypical men versus women tasks, you know?
You do the laundry.
I do the laundry, yeah.
It doesn't have to be stereotypical.
Right, and so, like, just, yeah, take certain things, like, that are your tasks. You do those tasks, so your spouse doesn't have to worry about them. It doesn't have to be on their mental load, the stuff that they have to do.
Yeah, and recognizing that, you know, I stay home with the kids, and you work. And that's just inherently different responsibilities.
Right.
And so as we adjust things throughout the day, like you said, it's not supposed to be 50-50. It's just, are we both working? Are we both contributing? And there are some days where, you know, I am doing more
mm-hmm.
because you're sick or you just had the worst day at work and
mm-hmm.
you just can't. And that's fine because there are some days where you come home and things are not okay.
Yeah.
And you have to pick up the slack. And I am like, you know, on the 20-30% spectrum. And sometimes we do that. I'll be like, you know what, Tyler, I'm being totally honest. I'm at 30% right now. I will give 100%, but my 100% will only come out as 30%.
Right.
So I'm going to need you to pick up the slack. And being willing to say, okay, we have different responsibilities. And we're, like you said, we're a unit working together towards a common goal and not making it a competition.
Right, yeah, and what you're saying with the 20%, 30%, 10%, a lot of people get really wrapped up in the numbers. Just go back to what we keep saying. This is like the biggest thing, the most important piece of advice. Your spouse is to you the greatest person ever, and you should remember that. That's the reason why you chose to marry them. It's because you think they're the best person ever. Not because you want them to stay the same forever, but because you think they're the best person ever. Don't worry so much about who's giving 100% and who's giving 99 or 98 or, oh, well, only 30. Don't give them the benefit of the doubt. Just assume that they're trying the best that they can all the time, even if it does not come across that way sometimes, because sometimes the best you can do is that 10%, 30%, whatever percent. I don't know. I don't like to get wrapped up and worried about the number so much.
Yeah, sorry. I didn't mean like I'm only doing 30%. It's more a gauge of
right.
effective communication
yeah.
if I only have 30% capacity right
yeah,
now.
Your energy levels. No,
yeah.
I'm just saying it's
energy.
People worry too much about what number they're at. And it's like, oh, well, you're at 40, I'm at 30. So you're going to do 110% or whatever. You know, like you got to,
yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of silly.
Yeah. Okay, so we're on the very last thing on our list, and unfortunately, I don't have a smooth transition for this one, but we did save the spicy one for the end. Something that I wanted to touch on was learning each other's anatomy, and I'm going to need to explain this for a second. So when it comes to, like, physical intimacy, but also just, like, having to go through pregnancy and birth and postpartum and understanding all that the women go through, I have found that when we sat down and took the time to like actually learn about each other's anatomy in the sense of like, I am totally tripping over my words. This is not something I'm comfortable talking about, if you can't tell. In my notes, I said, we read a book before we got married and it really helped us. I grew up in a family where we did not talk about body parts. We did not
use... Which is crazy because your dad's a doctor.
I know. It's so weird. My dad's literally a doctor, and we did not use medical terms for the body, unless my dad was trying to be fancy and use the Latin, whatever. But, like, we never said uterus. We never said vagina. We never said, like, any of that stuff. It was just... It was all taboo. It was all, like, uncomfortable. Whenever I was on my period, my entire family avoided me because they were just uncomfortable. They're like, something is wrong with your body and you're bleeding and we don't understand what's going on, but you are not a kind person right now and we don't want to talk to you. So like, I just grew up in a family where anything that came to the human body was just taboo and uncomfortable. And so I was really nervous going into marriage because now all of a sudden I was going to be sharing a part of me that not only had I never shared with anybody else because we waited until marriage, but I had never like talked about it or learned about it besides like what we learned in middle school sex ed, which is the lowest possible standard for human
anatomy. Basically nothing. Yeah.
Basically nothing. So we read this book together that just like helped us learn about, like intimacy and how each person feels pleasure based on their anatomy. And then like the psychology behind all of this stuff. And then also just like, as I've learned things over the years, you know, I think it helped you when I was pregnant and giving birth, you're like not in the dark. You actually like knew stuff about what was going on with my body. And I'd like to think that that made it a little bit less, frustrating or like nerve-wracking to you when it came time to being like, oh my gosh, what's going on with my wife? Like, she's not okay.
Yeah, and it's not just like, yeah, there's of course the sexual intimacy and that's very important in a marriage, but it's also like anatomy, like just the rest of it too. So yeah, with pregnancy, there's a lot that goes on with that. And Brooke was very good about keeping sure, making sure that I was informed. And we always would joke about this. We, with the different pregnancy apps, they always got to tell you what size fruit your baby is.
Yeah.
I don't know who decided however many years ago that we're going to compare babies to fruits. Like your little fetus is, oh, well, today's he's a kumquat. And it's like, cool, I have no basis of comparison because I don't even know what that really is. You know, like.
Nobody knows what a kumquat is.
So yeah, it's just like the silly things. It's like, oh, it's a watermelon. It's like, oh, I've, you know. Like, but anyways, I'm getting sidetracked, getting worried about the fruit babies. But just learning about the other person and asking them, you know, like, what do you like? What is something that I do that you like? And things like that. Just open communication. It doesn't have to be weird. It doesn't have to be awkward. You can just talk about stuff. This is your person, you know, this is who you chose to spend forever with. Like, just be open and honest about stuff. Like, it's way better to talk about it. It'll be awkward at first. You'll be silly. You can laugh about it. It's fine to laugh sometimes when silly things happen. But you know, you got to learn and you got to grow. And best way to do that is talking and figuring out what your spouse wants and needs and how you can help them.
Yeah. And removing all of the shame from it too. Because when we were reading that book and preparing for marriage and intimacy and all of that, I was terrified to even have a conversation with you.
Right.
Because I knew that I didn't know very much. I didn't even know all of the anatomy of my own body, let alone yours. And I didn't want to seem like this incompetent, naive woman that you just said that you wanted to spend eternity with. So I was like terrified to even start this conversation. And you have always been so good about not making anything shameful and, you know, not attaching any sort of feelings to it other than we're having a conversation and making sure that I feel really safe and really comfortable to talk about anything. And it goes for, you know, both ways. This is just how it's been in our relationship, but making sure that the only emotion that's there is respect and, vulnerability and, what's the word? Not honesty, but just like transparency, being comfortable. Like, you can talk to me. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to make you feel bad for asking a question. I'm not going to make you feel stupid
right.
for, you know, telling me, hey, actually, I don't like this. Or, hey, can we try this different mm-hmm. next time?
Yeah, and I think another thing to point out, so we're obviously, our religion is a huge part of our lives. And so there's a lot of, there's some issues that are pretty common with, especially with people from this traditionally Christian background, you know, that this sexual intimacy is like almost viewed as no, you get married, okay, no holds barred, go green light. And so that shift can be very difficult for some people to make, and that you know, flipping that switch isn't so much a switch a lot of times, and there will be guilt, especially at the beginning, and there are feelings of shame, and oh, I did something wrong, and to remember, and to, for those of us that are Christian, it is, sexual intimacy is designed by God to use in marriage to further, like, to procreate, to have children, and also to encourage bonds between spouses and to make the marriage relationship something more, something special, and that is something to remember. For those of you that are Christian, obviously, this isn't a religious podcast, but that's something that is very important to us and critical to our lives, and so that is something that we've had to both work with and deal with as we've matured in our relationship.
Yeah. I think that's the spiciest this is going to get for a while, so hope you enjoy that little segment. We're going to take a super quick pause so I can go get Hannah, and then we will wrap up the very last section of the episode. All right, I am back. Hannah is sitting on the couch with us. We'll see how she does. So if you hear noises, it's Hannah. The very last thing that we wanted to touch on before we wrap up is just one, bless you, Hannah is sick, one piece of advice to couples. I know we've talked about a lot of lessons that we've learned and we've given lots of unsolicited advice, but I thought it might be kind of nice to just give like one final piece where I was like, if there's one thing I want you to remember, it's this. For me, it's do not try and make things equal because they will never be. And I know we kind of touched on this, but the idea of don't make it 50-50. Don't sit there and nitpick and be like, well, I did this, so you have to do this, and stop trying to make it equal. The best thing you can do is just always focus on the other person and always give 100% in everything that you're doing. And if you're both doing that, then it won't matter how things are divvied up because you're both doing your best and you're both worrying about each other.
Right. So things can't be equal between you two because you two aren't the same. So the only way to make things equal is if they're exactly the same. And you can't have two exactly the same people. Even twins are always noticeably different from one another. You can, just talking with them, you know right away, oh, well, yeah, you're this kind of person, and the other twins are that kind of person. So things aren't equal, not because men and women can't be equal or because partners can't be equal, but because you're different and because life refuses to let us make things exactly even because there's so many variables. Things will never be exactly the same between the two of you. So I'll finish off with my last piece of marriage advice. It's the same thing that I've been saying over and over throughout the podcast, is give your spouse the benefit of the doubt. They're your favorite person.
I hope.
If they aren't, you got stuff to work on, and that's fine. Get there. There's professionals to help you with that. Your spouse should be your favorite person, so you should treat them like your favorite person. Give them the benefit of the doubt. Assume that they're trying their best, and things will work out a lot better. That's what we've seen.
Yeah. What a great, simple thing to end on. I know this episode was a little bit longer, but hopefully it was fun because you got to hear Tyler, and we were just kind of bouncing off of each other and just sharing what we've learned.
Try not to ramble too much. I probably did ramble.
Oh, we know that. I ramble, so it is all good. If you loved this episode and you want to hear more things like this, or you just want to hear more from Tyler, please let me know. I might try and sneak him on every once in a while just for different things. I think it's fun having you.
I'm happy to be here.
Do the podcast. We just got the microphone propped up on a bar stool, and we are sitting on the couch playing with Hannah. So this has been fun. Mama, thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, leave a rating and review, share with any of your friends who might benefit from this episode, and we will see you next week.
And that's the end of another episode. I hope you loved today's topic as much as I did. You can find all of today's show notes and details at thewellnourishedmama.com/podcast, as well as all of my recipes and resources on the blog. If you found this episode helpful, inspirational, or motivational, please leave a 5-star rating and review so other mamas can discover the podcast too. Oh, and don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you don't miss any new episodes. As always, you're amazing, mama. Don't forget that. I'll see you in the next episode. Love you.